Lonely, Lonely Heart by SPQR. Read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. Mobius looks down at the paperwork, gets a sort of flustered farm boy look on his face, looks back up at Loki and says, "You offered to give a cop fellatio in the middle of Central Park." "I obviously didn't know he was a cop," Loki says. "Though he did, he just didn't know that he was an undercover vice cop." "It's not illegal to engage in a bit of mutually agreed upon oral sex." "It is when you do it in Central Park," Mobius tells him, "and when you charge $50. Notes. For Dark is Rising. The sentence structure in this is total garbage, I'm so sorry, but you get the idea. 1. The first time Loki lays eyes on Agent Mobius, he's not yet Agent Mobius. They're in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, an exhibit of Dutch masters, two of only a smattering of people in a gallery full of whitewashed church interiors, and Loki spots almost immediately the fact that Mobius, Detective Mobius, he'll find out in short order, is a cop. Since Loki got into NYU, with the company he keeps and the extracurriculars he engages in, he's developed the ability to spot a cop at 100 yards. It's all in the posture. Stiff set of the shoulders like they're in a uniform at attention, hand on hip under pushed-back suit jacket, feet planted wide as if they're expecting to have it to either dole out or weather a tackle at any given moment. The man is in civilian clothes, jeans and a navy D-ring belt, an Oxford blue open over a white t-shirt, surfer blonde hair a little shaggier than the uniforms are allowed to wear it, but still every inch of him screams, "Cop!" Loki, who has at this point mostly stopped going to class to become the live-in plaything of a rich gentleman of indeterminate foreign provenance, is here on his own, since the aforementioned rich gentleman, known to his friends as Endwigast and lovers as, hilariously, Grand Master, has enough live-in playthings that he's not liable to miss one if he wanders off for the day. He's also still at that age when his confidence in his intelligence far outstrips his actual intelligence, so thinking to cheat fate, to tease death, swan gracefully through the long arms of the law, he goes up to Mobius and says, "NYPD, are we?" Mobius, who Loki doesn't know is Mobius yet, turns to him with an unimpressed expression, eyebrows up. "What?" he says. "Were you behind me in line? Hear me ask for the police discount?" Miffed, Loki says, "No." "Did I arrest you then? I arrest a lot of kids." "I'm not a kid," Loki says, indignant. This is not at all going the way that he envisioned. Mobius doesn't look like he believes him. "I'm at university," Loki insists. "I'm a junior at university." He leaves off the fact that he started an early program at 15 and is only barely 18 now, because he doesn't feel it will help his argument, and because he does feel, wholeheartedly, that this is an argument he deserves to win. "And what do you mean you arrest a lot of kids?" "You'd be surprised what kids get into these days," Mobius says. Then his whole energy shifts and he offers his hand to Loki. "Look, I'm sorry, man. I'm having a bad day." "Yeah, you got me. Detective Mobius, NYPD. Vice." "NYU," Loki reciprocates, shaking his hand, though truly he suspects at this point he must have been kicked out. He wouldn't know. He hasn't been checking his email. "Art history." "Art history, huh?" Mobius says, turning into the painting they're standing in front of. Sanredam, St. Mary's Square and St. Mary's Church, Utrecht, 1663. "Can you tell me anything about this one?" By the time Loki's finished explaining brattily that A, there are audio guides for this sort of thing, B, it's not as if Loki works here, and C, he can't be expected to store an encyclopedic knowledge of every painting. People specialize for a reason. He and Mobius have somehow become the last two people in the gallery. They've ended up on a bench in front of the St. Mary, Mobius leaning forward and talking with his hands, Loki with his weight on one arm and his legs crossed, disgusted at how intently he's wondering whether Mobius is one of those vice cops who doesn't mind buying a trick on the side, who would go with him into the bathroom if he asked. Mobius is saying something about Marishias and a class field trip at the end of high school and the color of daylight, and Loki asks, "Why do you like it?" "The painting." Mobius blinks, cut off mid-sentence. "What?" he says. "You don't like it?" "Not particularly." "Why are you here, then? Sitting in front of this painting with me, I mean." Loki shrugs. "It's hardly good form to come to an exhibit and not look at the whole thing." Mobius smiles a little. Loki thinks of Endwi, waiting for him at that hedonist penthouse back in Midtown, and wants, with a sharp spike of desperation, to kiss this man he's just met, to be pressed against the wall by him and bruised by him, to go back to his patron with someone else's marks on him. Detective Mobius looks soft. He looks kind. He looks as if he would be gentle and very attentive in bed. "I don't know," Mobius says after a minute, looking away, back to the painting. "I don't know why I like it. Sometimes things just whisper to your soul, you know, and you never figure out why. All his churches are like that for me." Shortly thereafter, Loki's phone rings obnoxiously enough to get him a dirty look from the docent in the next gallery, and when he pulls it out of his pockets, Mobius sees the caller ID, Daddy, and says, "Ah, I see your father's calling." And Loki says, "No, not my father," and has the distinct pleasure of seeing Mobius turn bright pink. He's still thinking of it later that night, sweat cooling on his bare skin as he lies diagonally across the length of Endwi's double king, a girl with bubblegum pink hair snoring against his hip, and a man named Biff slowly cutting off the circulation in his left arm, gazing out at the liquid black sky and the glittering Manhattan skyline. From up here on the 80th floor, it all looks quiet and peaceful, but Loki, despite the intense sexual ringing he's just been treated to, feels almost nothing resembling peace. His mind is stuck back in that gallery, on the shape of Detective Mobius's thigh under his jeans, his blonde stubble in the strange, once-broken line of his nose, the fond, teasing way he'd repeated, "Loki," when Loki told him his name, that folksy, aw-shucks voice. Some things just whisper to your soul. 2. The second time Loki meets Mobius, the detective has grown a mustache. Loki is in a holding cell with a bunch of undesirables, falsely imprisoned for the imagined crime of solicitation, and is weighing how unsanitary it would be to bite the beefy tattooed man who keeps trying to grope him, when a familiar voice on the other side of the bar says, "Loki?" In short order, he's been removed from the general population and installed at Mobius's desk in the middle of the noisy vice bullpen, given terrible coffee and half a bag of Doritos, and instructed that just because they bonded over a painting a few months ago doesn't mean Mobius is about to give him any special treatment. "Special treatment," Loki echoes indignant. "This is entrapment. I've been set up." Mobius looks down at the paperwork, gets a sort of flustered farm boy look on his face, looks back up at Loki and says, "You offered to give a cop fellatio in the middle of Central Park." "I obviously didn't know that he was a cop," Loki says, "though he did. He just didn't know that he was an undercover vice cop. It's not illegal to engage in a bit of mutually agreed upon oral sex." "It is when you do it in Central Park," Mobius tells him, "and when you charge $50. "Well," Loki says officiously, "it's not a crime in England. This is just a simple case of cultural misunderstanding." "I'm pretty sure prostitution is a crime in England," Mobius sighs, but he still hasn't started filling out Loki's arrest paperwork, and instead of starting now, he gets up, picking up his coat. "Come on, get up. I'll buy you some better food." Loki isn't interested in being a contestant on some heartwarming Midwestern version of Scared Straight, and he doesn't appreciate being treated like a charity case. But contrary to popular belief, he does know when to shut his mouth. So he stays quiet as Mobius marches him down to evidence for a long, puffy coat. You can't go out dressed like that. It's 30 goddamn degrees. and then marches him across the street to a diner that's absolutely filthy with off-duty cops. Loki feels twitchy and surveilled as he slides into the vinyl booth, and the second the waitress has hopped away with their order, "Coffee and the deluxe pancake breakfast for both of us, thanks, Jan," he snaps. "You're not going to talk me into changing my life." Mobius looks unconcerned. "Wouldn't dream of it," he says. "I just thought you could use a good meal, you know, if you're so strapped for cash you're sucking dick for $50. Loki stares at him, sort of startled by the word sucking dick. "I'm not," he starts. "I mean..." "Hey, no excuses necessary," Mobius says, holding his hands palm forward in a mocking gesture of surrender. "I'm not trying to talk you into changing your life or anything." Loki glares. He glares all the way through two cups of coffee, a stack of silver dollar pancakes, two eggs, three pieces of bacon, hash browns, a third cup of coffee, and Mobius paying the check. And then they're out on the sidewalk, and Mobius is making like he's going to walk back across the street to the station, calling over his shoulder, "See you around, kid." And Loki, like someone about to go over a cliff, lurching out for a handhold, is suddenly gripped by fear. "Detective," he blurts. Mobius stops on the curb, turning back around. "Yeah?" Loki starts and then stops. Cars zip by in the street, shing through the winter slush. Nearby, someone lays on a horn. Mobius looks very kind and very golden and very just, like Loki always imagined the Knights of the Round Table when he read The Once and Future King. And all at once, Loki realizes that he can't do this, can't do what he was about to do. He and this man exist in different worlds. There's no confiding in him. There's no reaching out to him. Loki isn't special to this man. Mobius probably buys breakfast for a dozen down on their luck hookers every week. The thought makes Loki feel cold. "Nothing," he says after a long minute. "Never mind. Thank you for breakfast." This time when he turns to go, it's Mobius who stops him, hand on his elbow through the puffy coat. "Hey," he says, "hold on a minute." And when Loki turns back, "You've got parents, right? Do they love you?" Loki blinks, startled into truthfulness. "Yes, my mother, maybe. I don't know." Mobius's eyes soften. "You should go back to her. Go back to college. Art history, right?" He waits for Loki's nod, then finishes. "You keep turning tricks in Central Park, you're going to end up dead. And I think that would be a real shame." A real shame. Loki would scoff disdainfully if he could go back and do it over again. But as it is, no one has expressed even the faintest trace of affection for him in a long time, at least since he left Undui's psychedelic penthouse harem, and probably long before that. So he only says awkwardly, clearing his throat, looking away, stepping away, "I'll give you some advice in return, detective." "Oh yeah?" Mobius says, smiling a little. "What's that?" "That mustache really doesn't suit you." For years, that's Loki's last memory of the man, like a snapshot, an impressionist painting. Man in beige suit and quiet mirth. Laughing on a sidewalk thick with grimy black snow, summer blonde head among a stream of pedestrians, the oddly demure line of his shoulders and his eyes bright in that moment, just before he turns to look for Loki, mouth already open around a retort, and finds him gone. 3. Loki doesn't go back to his parents. He never so much as tries to go back, but he has a strong suspicion he wouldn't be welcome if he did. Confirmed, tangentially, by his few meetings with his brother Thor, quick drinks in a hotel bar, "Only in town for a few days, you know how it is, work stuff." "Oh, they're good, when Loki asks after Odin and Frigga. None of the old, "Dad's still pissed at you for flunking class," or "Mum wishes you would call more," just "good." They're good. Conversation avoidance bracing chug of the rest of the drink, flagging down the bartender, no more of that glass smashing of their youth. "I think we're going to need something stronger, thanks." Drinking hard, parting early, no promises to do this again sometime soon, just a clap on the back and out into the bracing cold of night. No, Instead of going back to his parents, Loki goes back to Daddy. It's really not as bad as it all seems, as far as eccentric and lecherous billionaires go, and Dwi is actually quite manageable. A generous lover, if not particularly attentive. And anyhow, the only reason Loki left in the first place was because they had a row of epic proportions. Or rather, Loki had a row, and Dwi blinked owlishly at him and said nothing. About whether letting Topaz have a key to Loki's room constituted reckless endangerment and a breach of contract. So Loki swallows his pride and then goes back to the 80th floor and swallows some other stuff, and in fairly short order all is well. And Dwi's so scatterbrained he might not even remember Loki left. In summer, the man announces that he's moving to Amsterdam, and anyone who wants to can go with him. Loki's been haunting New York's art museums to no avail and says, yes. Not because he needs the money. He didn't fall into prostitution because he needed the money. There's about $1 million in his trust fund. He only ever did it because at 18 he craved sex at almost all hours of the day, and he knew he would never fit comfortably or sustainably into a normal life. Felt that he never needed to step sideways and live outside of it. And at the time he'd thought that letting a wealthy Lothario clothe him and house him and pay inordinate amounts of monies to do things to Loki that he would have let him do for free, was rather a clever and luxurious way to escape normal. Not because he needs the money, but because he does miss Europe quite a bit. He has lofty aspirations about going back to school. There must be schools in the Netherlands, mustn't there? And he speaks enough Dutch to order food and demand to be taken to the Norwegian embassy. He'll certainly be able to follow a class on mid-late Renaissance Italian art. But as it turns out, Dwi isn't going to Amsterdam for the red light districts and the lenient drug laws, which is what Loki would have guessed. Instead, he's going because there's been a robbery at one of his quote-unquote dragon hordes, and he was startled enough by it that he wants to personally oversee the recovery. This, Loki will realize in hindsight, is how one crime spirals into another. Plaything turns into convenient courier. Run this over to Sven, will you? You know Sven, the Viking. Make sure you put it in his hands yourself. Turns into an extra set of eyes at the meet, turns into four dead bodies in a parking garage, and a stolen Gyarade in Loki's lap while a dark SUV peels away from the scene. It's a pencil drawing. The morning of Palace, startlingly uncovered and dusted with a few speckles of rain. Jostling in the back seat, Loki runs the pad of his thumb reverently over the teal-blue mat, reading the inscription, He mihi, quantum presidium astonia et quantum tu peritis lule. Feeling somehow the effect of Girodet's ethereal moonlight and the anguished expression on Asostisi's face as a tight, breathless constriction somewhere in the west of his heart. That's a pretty nice piece, isn't it? Says Dwi, craning around in the passenger seat. Not worth much, but we can't have thieves setting precedents, can we? Certainly not, Loki agrees distantly, eyes fixed on those speckled raindrops. How much damage is that water doing? He wonders. Would I do more to wipe it off? Dab it? Hey, Dwi says, seeming to remember. You were an art student, weren't you, before I... Throaty tickle little chuckled, turning to Topaz in the driver's seat like she's going to share in the joke, which she doesn't. Before I, sunk my claws into you? Art history, Loki says, still entranced by the drawing in his lap. Should I even be touching it? Well, that's handy, Dwi says. Very handy. Topaz, shouldn't he help me look after the inventory? Be good to have someone who knows what he's doing, wouldn't it? Topaz grunts. Which is how Loki ends up, over the course of the next few weeks, becoming the inexperienced and underqualified caretaker for several dozen pieces of stolen art. And Dwi, he discovers, functions as a sort of bank for the world's criminals, a middleman who holds stolen items as collateral while criminals run out and negotiate deals. Some of the items he holds, the inventory, he calls it, are stolen paintings, stolen drawings, the odd stolen statue, though those are never more than a foot tall. Loki's 3 years of undergraduate art history have not prepared him to become, immediately and nauseatingly, nanny to several Girodets, two Picassos, a rosé embroidery, a plaster cast of Rodin's The Cathedral, and the landscape of Delft, which, if it is not a Vermeer, is certainly at least school of. They're all too famous to be turned into cash, of course. Interpol would swoop in the moment anyone tried to fence them, but they're useful here, as collateral. Loki learns very quickly the logistics of the business, the particulars of conversation and fine art storage, because at the moment he steps foot into the Dragon Horde, a creaky old house on canal in the south of the city, he recognizes that he has here a golden opportunity to climb the ladder, as it were, from contracted fucktoy to trusted member of a lucrative criminal organization. Endui, having many extra fucktoys and also now unfettered access to several very enticing red light districts, doesn't fight Loki too much on the renegotiation of his employment contract. And in short order, 4 years have passed and Loki is standing in a horde in Switzerland, Lausanne, snow falling and wind howling outside, and he steps back while the men who are delivering his newest charge use a crowbar to gently, gently pop her out of the boards. They lean her against the wall and let the plywood fall away, and all at once, in a swift draft of warm, blessed air, Loki is looking at the whitewashed interior of St. Bavo, Haarlem, 1660, Sarendam. It's really not at all surprising that things go downhill from there. 4.
NYPD Art Theft Czar retires! Name successor! Reads the headline of the first article Loki sees.
He's standing in an airport in the south of Italy, new terminal, all glass, only half built, co-ed backpackers waiting in line for Starbucks under exposed scaffolding. What he's looking for is an English newspaper, Times of London, Wall Street Journal, anything. His Italian's not so good, but he's been forced to rely on it for going on 9 days now, and his brain is tired. What catches his eye is NYPD, and underneath it, Detective Mobius's face. He looks older, more tired, hair cut short and starting to go blonde to gray. But the rest is the same. Crooked nose, kind, creased eyes, and that damnable mustache, gone fully gray before the rest of him, and still not the right shape for his face at all. Loki buys the paper and reads the article on the plane, long legs stretched out in one of only two first-class seats, feeling much younger than he has in a long time. Apparently, shortly after Loki left New York, Mobius apprenticed himself to the NYPD's sole art crimes cop, an old detective called Kang who was planning on retirement. Now that the retirement has come to pass, making Mobius the NYPD's sole art crimes cop, and something in Loki thrills at the thought of that. That there is a thread connecting them, if not heart to heart, then certainly being to being, solitude to solitude. The lone wolf detective on a rainy, overpopulated streets of New York, chasing after an old master that no one around him has ever heard of. The criminal on the crowded plane whose secret pseudo-life elevates him above the rest of the passengers, above the daily meaningless tedium of their existence. After that, Loki keeps an eye out for Mobius in the headlines.
NYPD art cop solves Gardner theft. Rembrandt recovered.
Mobius trying to look serious and businesslike as he's photographed in front of the storm on the Sea of Galilee.
NYPD art cop finds stolen Mettinger in Manhattan flophouse.
Man with pipe glaring from the front page. Within 2 years, there's another article to announce Mobius's successor. It seems he's been recruited by the FBI. In Lausanne, Loki waits until spring, hoping with bated breath every day that no one arrives to reclaim the Sarendam. He spends the last months of winter almost feverish with worry, shut up in an attic apartment on the Saint-François Square, staring out at the thin smattering of tourists and thinking over 1,000 contingencies in his mind, too paranoid to put them down on paper. He's never truly been a thief himself before, and though he's learned enough over the course of his employment with Endui to know what he's doing, The majority of art thefts are brutish daubs anyway, smash and grabs and shattered glass all over the floor, alarms wailing into the night. He finds himself harrowed by the prospect. Nonetheless, he lies awake at night, dreaming. Rainy orange streetlights reflected on the slanted ceiling. St. Bavo in the 17th century, high vaulted arches, the purity of clean white plaster. A man's voice laughing next to him in the dark. Kid. A warm hand in his, a touch on his elbow. On the 1st of April, the Sarindam disappears from Undui's hoard, and Loki disappears off the face of the earth. There's no news coverage of the theft, no ripples in the international art community. After all, the painting is already stolen. It's not as if Undui is going to file a police report. Loki sees evidence that his ex is after him because he knows where to look. Whispers from acquaintances, orders left in anonymous mailboxes Undui doesn't know Loki knows about, inquiries staged at their old stomping grounds, places Topaz suspects Loki might run. Loki's quite a bit smarter than his old employer. Smarter even than his old employer's guard dog. So he manages to stay hidden. He stashes the painting in Oslo, and then spends a few months skipping his way across Central America, nowhere anyone in his line of work pays attention to. Belmapan and Managua and Puerto Ayora and Medellin, so that by the time he lands in Munich, his tale has long since gone cold. He crosses the border into Poland on a Russian passport he commissioned from a forger in Colombia. Soviet. All I can do is Soviet. With gauze shoved in the back of his mouth like he's just had oral surgery, so no one thinks twice about his awful, garbled accent. Once he arrives in Warsaw, he spends a week wandering the National Museum looking at many paintings to which he has no particular attachment, so as not to draw any attention on the security footage to the one that he really wants, the Grote Kerk. It's much easier to steal a painting when one has friends who, say, for instance, can stage a distraction in the next gallery. But Loki is alone. He is more alone now, in truth, than he's ever been. No matter, though. He supposes it's lucky he didn't meet Mobius in the exhibit of equestrian armor that had been showing in the Met's lobby. Stealing several hundred pounds of metal would be a trickier proposition. As it is, another week in Warsaw, this time wandering rather seedier locales than the National Museum, and Loki has a plan. NYPD, are we? Reads the note he leaves at the scene. He can only pray that Mobius remembers. 5. So, Mobius says 3 years and 5 stolen sarindams later, we meet at the appointed place, huh? They're in Washington, D.C., a dark, smoky bar in Chinatown where Loki knows the proprietor and the proprietor knows the value of hush money, packed with their wheeler-dealer lobbyists and congressmen taking their mistresses out for drinks. No phones, no cameras, eyes sliding past faces without recognition as a matter of course. Loki's requested a booth full of silly juvenile ideas about kissing in shadowy corners and hands under tables. But now he can see from the stiff way Mobius slides into the seat across from him, the unhappy set of his mouth, that this evening is not going to go how he planned. So he shifts. He refocuses. He sets. Thank you for coming, clearing his throat. It's been a long time, my friend. I'm not your friend, Mobius says. Loki's eyes flicker down to the tabletop, to the ring of sweat his drink has left on the finished wood. He thinks of all these years of what he's considered correspondence. Notes left in empty frames, Mobius's public statements, promises to track him down, recover the artwork and make him face justice. Then waits a moment while his heart breaks quietly in his chest. When it's done, he says, apologies. You're the closest thing I have, so you'll have to forgive me the familiarity. Mobius swears, leaning back in the booth. Loki, we're not, he starts, and then stops. He looks at Loki across the table, really looks at him, like he's trying to locate the waifish 18-year-old inside the man that Loki is now. Broad shoulders, overlong hair, the same 3 inches of height he had on Mobius all those years ago, which feel like a lot more than 3 inches now that he's grown into himself. Tailored three-piece suit instead of the Lost Boy street clothes Andui used to put him in, his body clean and not recently fucked, and virile underneath it, like a man on a Grecian urn. Whatever Mobius sees makes his eyes sad.
"I thought you got out," he says softly. "I thought that was why I never saw you again all those years ago. I thought you turned your life around."
"I did," Loki says. He doesn't mention the fact that he still picks up the odd trick in a hotel bar every once in a while when he's feeling lonely. It's not relevant.
"I'm the best in the world at what I do, detective."
"It's agent now, actually," Mobius says with just a hint of humor. "Special agent, if you want to be technical about it."
"Special agent, then," Loki returns.
He tries to make it teasing, but there's an aching maw in his chest, so he's not sure it comes across. Mobius huffs, shaking his head. The years have been kind to him. He's grown into that unwieldy mustache the way Loki has grown into his height. He looks kinder, more capable, more wise. Or maybe that's just all those years of separation speaking. It's true, after all, what they say about absence in the heart.
"You're very good at what you do," Mobius says after a minute. "And you're very hard to track down. I'll give you that.
I probably never would have found you if you didn't invite me out for drinks." Here, a pointed look, almost admonishing. "You could have got caught by someone who isn't me." Then Mobius drags a hand over his face, sighing.
"But you're a criminal, Loki."
Loki turns his glass, knocking half-melted ice against the side.
"I don't hurt people," he says.
"Not directly, maybe. But how many thousands, how many millions of people have you kept from seeing those siren dams? And for what? So you can shut them in a dark room halfway around the world and know you have them?"
"For you," Loki says in a rush, astonished that Mobius hasn't already put this together.
"I took them for you." He realizes as soon as he says it that he shouldn't have. Mobius could be wearing a wire. There could be a van parked out on the curb full of FBI and Interpol waiting to swarm the building the moment Loki confesses. But a moment later he realizes something else. Mobius is smarter than that. He could arrest Loki now, sure, but then they'd never find the paintings. They'd be lost forever. So Mobius isn't raising a concealed microphone in his watch to his mouth and barking, "Now!" He's not lunging across the table to put Loki in cuffs. He's just staring at him, eyes a little wide, mouth a little slack, like someone just hit him. After a moment, he blinks, scrubs a hand across his face again.
"You could have sent me an email, you know. That would have been easier."
"I don't have email," Loki says.
"What? Really? How is that possible?"
"We're an old-fashioned bunch, aren't thieves?" Mobius shakes his head, astonished.
"A phone call, then. I mean, you could have just said."
"I did," Loki says. "I did just say." Mobius looks at him again. Loki's never felt uncomfortable under his gaze, never felt like he needed to put on a mask or put on airs. Mobius is, to him, unique among men, the quality of his attention unique among men, and Loki had almost forgotten it. How sitting in that diner, throat rough and mud on his knees of his pants, bundled in a coat that probably belonged to a murder victim or something, he had felt for the first time in his life that his body was not anything but truthful.
"Okay," Mobius says. "If you took them for me, then you can put them back for me."
Loki stares. Somehow he didn't anticipate this line of reasoning.
"Put them back for me," Mobius repeats, "exactly where you got them from. And when you're done, go to The Hague. Check into the Hotel de Indies. You know it?" He botches the pronunciation, but yes, Loki knows it, and he says as much. Mobius nods, lips pressed into a tight line.
"Good. You check in there, and I'll come find you. But not until every Serendam is back. Capiche?"
All right, Loki says, because he refuses to say capiche. The Hotel des Indies. Mobius reaches across the table and takes his hand. Loki forgets for a moment to breathe. Mobius' thumb brushes over the knob of his wrist, gently over the greenish lines of his veins. Mobius, Loki says softly. Mobius drops his hand and stands. I'll see you there. And then he's gone. 6. In his line of work, Loki has had ample opportunity to observe couples. Married couples, dating couples, breeding couples herding spawn, shy, blushing schoolchildren holding hands at the back of large, noisy field trips. Loki has always thought, and his observations have only confirmed, that he does not experience love correctly, not like other people. Love, for him, is an emotion of dark rooms, locked doors and smothered gasps and furtive rendezvous, a chronic thing, a sin. He does not understand how people can stand to love in the daylight, or how they can love so shallowly, so uncuriously, unhungrily, unselfishly. Loki's bewildering obsession with Mobius, the individual heart shock of a normal man in a crowded gallery, unremarkable face on the front page of the Daily News, familiar beige suit under dusty raincoat in smoky Chinatown bar, is so strong that Loki doesn't think it will ever subside. So he puts the serendams back. Putting a piece back is an easier proposition than stealing it, since museums aren't so much worried about people adding things to their collection as they are taking them away. And Loki makes quick work of it. Gotekirk goes back to the National Museum in Warsaw, Cathedral of St. John's at Herkonbusch to the National Gallery in Washington, St. Jeskirk in the Museum of Fine Art in Boston, near miss with a rent-a-cop, flashlight beam cutting through the dark gallery, crouched behind a Rodin, holding his breath until flashlight slides over the just-replaced serendam without stopping, and the footsteps continue away. The only truly difficult one to return is the first one he took, the Sant'Bavo, which, as per the terms of Mobius's edict, exactly where you got them from, has to be returned to Andwigast. Loki runs into a few old acquaintances when he breaks into the Lusan horde, so that by the time he washes up in Rotterdam Haag Airport, he is more than a little busted up. He makes his cabbie, who barely bats an eye at his appearance, stop at a pharmacy and stuffs the new empty space in his overnight bag full of gauze, skin glue, and disinfectant. Somehow he doesn't collapse at the Hotel de Indes front desk. When he makes it up to the presidential suite, he raids the minibar for tiny bottles of vodka, which he upends over the worst of his wounds, biting a plush towel and grabbing hard on the dark marble counter, red walls of the bathroom lurching and pulsing in his vision like a living thing. Then he collapses face first in the pillows and sleeps for 20 hours. He wakes up sometime later to discover that he's bled all over the bed. Even if he manages to dispose of the sheets, there's not much he can do for the mattress. Nonetheless, he marches grimly down to one of the normal floors with a bucket and retrieves enough ice to furnish a passable habitat for several penguins. Once he's got it spread out on the bed, he gets in the shower and turns it as hot as it will go, fogging up the glass, turning his pale skin heat rash pink, burning what he hopes is the last of the airport grime out from under his nails, behind his ears. Just as he was wrenching the shampoo out of his hair, slicking it back wet against his skull, there's a knock on the door. Loki hesitates, pauses, thinks he might have imagined it. A moment later, it comes again. He turns the shower off, wraps a towel around his waist, and pads out over the plush carpet, through the sitting room and across the checkered-board marble entryway to the door, which he opens. "Wow! Presidential suite," Mobius says, mock-impressed. "Long way from $50 blowjobs, huh?" Loki blinks, thrown. He knows Mobius said he would be here, that he would meet him here. But somehow he didn't really believe it. Subconsciously, he supposes he thought Mobius would use his infatuation to get him to put the paintings back, and then deliver him conveniently into the hands of justice. He'd expected a heavy knock,
Open up, Mr. Odinson. Interpol.
Rough hands shoving him to the floor and a knee between his shoulder blades. Handcuffs in a holding cell at the International Court of Justice. Mobius asked him to come to The Hague, of all places. What else could he have intended Loki to think? And yet he came anyway, and maybe that's what Mobius wanted all along. Maybe all he wanted was to make Loki take a leap of faith, the way Mobius himself is taking a leap of faith being here. All this, Loki thinks, in the space of a few seconds, staring at Mobius on his doorstep. Then, at long last, he finds his tongue and uses it to say, "I never really needed the money." Mobius's friendly expression softens to something more intimate. "I know," he says. After a beat, he clears his throat and steps forward. "Come on, let me in. I've got an airport all over me. I need to rinse off." Loki has an out-of-body experience as he moves aside to let Mobius shuffle with his overnight bag through the door. The reality of the situation catches up with him for the first time in something like 8 years. For a long time, Mobius has been a character in a play, dramatis personae of a myth or an epic or some sort of fairy tale, distant and larger than life and impossible to reach. But now, as he shuffles past Loki into the room, Loki sees detailed, brilliant snapshots of him. Hair just slightly too long in the back, over the starched fold of his collar. Stacked wrinkles on forehead. Sharp jut of chin and strange profile of nose, dumping his overnight bag on an ottoman and going into the steamy bathroom. For a long moment after he's gone, Loki just stands there, damp skin drying in the canned air, hand on the open door. The shower starts up again, the quiet suction of a glass door opening, brief glimpse of skin in the fogged mirror, off-key warbling, Bee Gees. "I've gotta get a message to you." Loki closes the door, puts the chain on, and follows Mobius into the bathroom. He's always wondered why so many poets chose to locate love in the heart instead of the mind. Love is a chemical reaction, he knows, a hormonal response meant to reinforce the biological imperative. But he crosses the threshold to the bathroom and sees Mobius's bare feet on the tile, and he understands suddenly that love is in the heart and not the mind, because the heart is the body, and the body knows what the mind is too smart to know. That love is not an idea, but an incontrovertible fact of the soul. He has never, before this moment, considered the possibility of Mobius barefoot, with pale, bony ankles and long toes. But also there's a part of him that's seen this a million times, to which this is familiar. Teasing look, humorous blue eyes under wet eyelashes. Loki. "Loki," Mobius says through the shower door. "Are you going to stand out there all day, or are you coming in?" Mobius's clothes are discarded on the floor. Loki sheds his towel, simpler than the unstrapping of armor, but not all dissimilar, and goes in. He's been naked in front of many people over the years, and not one of them has ever held his gaze like Mobius does in the close, steamy cubicle of the shower. Loki is glad for it, that his eyes don't stray. Something about this man, average as he is, makes him feel like a virgin, stupid with lust and hungry for everything at once. It's a good thing, then, that Mobius makes the first move. He lets out a shaky breath and reaches for Loki's fingertips, trembling as he touches the swollen mess of his bruised right eye. What happened? Loki catches his wrist, keeping his hand in place. "I walked into a door," he lies. Mobius huffs something that's not quite a laugh. Water sluices down his body. The white noise makes the outside world seem very far away and unreal, like ancient history. This is the world Loki lives in now, one where there are the only two people, where Mobius touches him. "You know," Mobius says, conversational, "I saw you once, in Prague, a couple days after you stole that sketch. The Harlem Nieuwe Kerk in the private collection. You remember it?" "I remember," Loki says. It feels dangerous to speak.
"Yeah." Mobius's fingers run over his cheek, down to his jaw. "You were in a cafe, sitting in the window,
all these little white espresso mugs on the table in front of you. I was across the street about to get in a car. Some Interpol agent was picking me up, and I thought, Jesus, that kid looks so lonely. I had to go over there. Loki's breath catches in his throat. Mobius barrels on. But then I realized if I went over, I'd have to arrest you. And I didn't want to do that. Loki's breathing hard, even though all he's doing is standing still. Mobius' free hand gentles over the wounds on his ribs, over the jut of his hip. That day in the Met, he says, barely above a whisper. I wanted to kiss you so bad. Felt like such a perv. But I just... You remember? Some things just... Oh, hell. He blinks fast, voice hitching. Some things just... I remember, Loki promises. Gods, of course I remember. And takes Mobius' head in his hands and kisses him. Mobius' mustache scratches his upper lip. Mobius presses him back against the tile and nudges his legs open until Loki sinks down and they're of a height, wet chest, heart to heart, beating ribcage to ribcage, a lock of Loki's hair stuck between their cheeks. Loki grabs on tight to Mobius' shoulders, probably leaving white fingerprints on his skin, and he's thinking about being 18 and wanting Mobius to take him into the bathroom of the Met, how he couldn't stop staring at his mouth. They break apart, ragged and clinging. I should have kissed you, Mobius says, so close that his mustache tickles over Loki's lips. I would have saved us both a lot of trouble. You should have saved the mustache, Loki jokes, because he's had quite enough emotional honesty and tender gazing for one day. It still doesn't suit you. Mobius laughs, so hard that Loki starts laughing too. Really laughing, so much the corners of his smile hurt in a way he can't really remember doing since he was a child. Tell you what, Mobius says, then kisses him again, short and chaste, saying in between kisses, you come work for me, and I'll shave the mustache. Work for you, Loki echoes indignantly, but he doesn't stay indignant for long, because Mobius's tongue is in his mouth. Once they give up flailing around like beached fish in the shower, they stagger lip-locked to the bed to discover a whole bunch of half-melted ice that Loki forgot about and a giant bloodstain on one side. Loki, knowing what he does about hotels, cautions that the sofa in the sitting room is hardly a better option in terms of health and sanitation, so they climb lopsided, awkward. So awkward, but the eager heat of Mobius's hands and Mobius's heavy body between his legs does a lot to dispel Loki's nervousness. Onto the unslept-in half of the bed, where Mobius maps Loki's broad chest with open-mouth kisses and proceeds to call him all sorts of mortifying, melting names. Sweetheart, and honey, and baby, and kid. Loki does a lot of undignified gasping and clutching and comes almost as soon as Mobius touches him. Mobius buries his face in Loki's shoulder, breathing like he's trying not to laugh. The bedsheets are a mess around them. Loki stares despondently at the ceiling, every nerve ending thrumming with the afterimage of his orgasm, and whines, I used to be better at this. I swear, I used to be genuinely very good. Mobius lifts his head and, oh, he wasn't trying not to laugh. He was trying not to come. Honey, he says, kissing Loki's sternum, his chin, the tip of his nose, while Loki's hands come up automatically to frame his face. If you were any better at this, I think I'd be dead. Christ, that was the hottest thing that ever happened to me. Loki raises an eyebrow. Me coming all over your hand. That was the hottest thing that ever happened to you. Mobius blushes. You've any idea how long I've been dreaming about you coming in my hand? Loki reaches up and pets his damp hair out of his face. The same feeling in his fingers as when he first touched the morning of Pallas in the back of that SUV a million years ago. Yes, actually, he says after a long minute. I think I do. The end.